The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
We've been working our way through Matthew's Gospel. We're on to, I think it's the third section of the Sermon on the Mount, perhaps the most famous speech ever given. Jesus goes up onto the mountain, speaks to his disciples with the crowd listening in the background. Now, as we come to this part of the Sermon on the Mount today, I wanted to read to you a few paragraphs from one of my favourite books. It's written by a man who actually is a kind of publicly stated atheist, Alain de Botton. The book is Status Anxiety. Not surprisingly, it's about the anxiety we feel about our status. The first half of the book is brilliant at diagnosing the problems. I think the second half of the book, he doesn't have as many answers, but the first half diagnoses the problems brilliantly. Let me read it with you and see what you think. He says this: every adult life could be said to be defined by two great love stories. The first, the story of our quest for sexual love, is well known and well charted. Its vagaries form the staple of music and literature. It is socially accepted and celebrated. The second, the story of our quest for love from the world, is a more secret and shameful tale. If mentioned, it tends to be in caustic or mocking terms, as something of interest chiefly to envious or deficient souls. Or else the drive for status is interpreted in an economic sense alone. And yet this second love story is no less intense than the first. It is no less complicated, important, or universal, and its setbacks are no less painful. There is heartbreak here too. The attention of others matters to us because we are afflicted by a congenital uncertainty as to our own value, as a result of which affliction we tend to allow others' appraisals to play a determining role in how we see ourselves. Our sense of identity is held captive by the judgment of those we live among. Our ego or self-conception could be pictured as a leaking balloon, forever requiring the helium of external love to remain inflated, and ever vulnerable to the smallest pinpricks of neglect. There is something at once sobering and absurd in the extent to which we are lifted up by the attentions of others and sunk by their disregard. So what's he saying? He's saying we want the love of the world around us. Now, you can call it love, you can call it honour, you can call it respect, you can call it status, but I think he's on the money there. We want to be loved or appreciated by those around us, and the way that people around us react has a huge effect on us. It's in everything we do. Have you ever wondered why? I guess, you know, if you're under 40, social media is this thing, under 35, social media is just this thing that you do. Have you ever wondered why social media is so powerful? And why is it? Why do people post on Facebook all the time? Or Instagram. One of my daughters says the purpose of Instagram is to hate people. Now, what does she mean? It means people put on Instagram these photos of them doing these beautiful, glossy, exciting things, or eating this perfect meal, or just got this perfect haircut, or whatever it is, and the aim is to get as many likes as you can. In fact, I understand, though, there are sneaky ways to manufacture likes on your Instagram posts so that you, win the competition and get more love than anybody else. And this desire for the love of the world around us, we don't get too close to that, it gets too loud. This desire for the love of the world around us affects everybody. It affects Bible shot speakers who want you to turn up and want you to listen. Thank you very much for being here. Okay. It even affects our Prime Minister. There's Mr. Turnbull and a homeless man, and Mr. Turnbull is actually putting the money into the cup, okay, that's going in, and yet he was criticised for it. The headline reads, Turnbull criticised for giving homeless man money. And so the photographer who put it up onto the Facebook page says, check Malcolm's right hand and then check his left hand and you'll know why this photo doesn't even need a caption. So if you look at Mr. Turnbull's left hand, it's got a wad of 20s and 50s, and he's putting a five into the cup. And so we're told the reaction was mixed with many, this is in 2016, with many criticising the former investment banker for not handing over a bigger chunk of his reported $200 million fortune, while others defended Mr. Turnbull for simply taking the time to give at all. So what were Mr. Turnbull's motives for putting money in the cup? Well, how can we know? How can we know? But you know what? There is a way that Mr. Turnbull himself could have been sure about his motives. And there is a way for all of us to be sure about our motives. And that's what Jesus is talking about today. So as you come to the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus has his way of kind of putting his finger on right on the sensitive points of where we live. And today he's asking us the question, who is your audience? As we live day by day, as we do things, as we operate, as we do certain actions, who's our audience? Is it the people around us as we look for love and approval? Or Jesus is asking his followers, what we might call today Christians, Jesus is asking those who follow him, who's your audience? Is it the world around us or is it God? And are you able to live with an audience of one? And actually, if you do that, it'll set you free. Are you able to live with an audience of one? And as you do that, it'll set you free. Because Jesus is saying today, the value of an action is not so much in the action itself. The value lies in why did you do it? Why did you do it? Who was your audience? And in the next few minutes, I'd like to look with you. Is it wrong or somehow worth less if you're a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus? Now, I know when we may not all be there and maybe you're just rubbing your chin having a think, but if you are a follower of Jesus, is it somehow less worthy to do an action looking for a reward from God? Is it wrong to do something hoping that God will reward you, or is that somehow a lesser motivation? If you look at in the handout, the Bible passage is there. You look at verse 4, verse 6, verse 18. Jesus says blatantly, couldn't say more simply, God will reward you. Well, what does he mean? Okay, so Jesus gives the principle and then he gives some examples. And my guess is he could multiply this many times over, but and maybe he did on the day, but Matthew just gives us three examples. So let's look at the principle. So you 6:1, it's in your hand or it's on the screen. Yep. Jesus says, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. I'll read it again. This is what today's all about. Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. And then the three examples he talks about are giving, prayer, and fasting. Giving, prayer, and fasting. And let's go through and have a look at each of those quickly. And you'll see there's a I'll show you at the end, but there's a common pattern in each of these examples that he gives. Verse 2, giving to the needy. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues or on the streets, to be honoured by others. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward in full. Now as I read what the scholars say, no one's quite sure whether they actually got to the point of blowing a trumpet before they gave money. But we talk about blowing your own trumpet on something. You know, it's a colloquial term. But I guess even today, people do like to, if you're going to make a big donation, if you're going to give a whole lot of money to something, you do like to be noticed. So, for example, 2015, Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook billionaire, and his wife, Priscilla, gave $75 million to San Francisco Hospital. How do I know that? Well, it's everywhere in the media. I think it even went on. I think he has a Facebook page as well that it went on. Now, why did they give $75 million to the San Francisco Hospital? I don't know. Who am I to say their motives? But I guarantee there's a way that they could have been absolutely sure that their motive was only to help sick people and develop the hospital rather than begin to lay the platform for his presidential campaign that some of the media are talking about in the not too distant future, and that would be for him to have done it anonymously or quietly. You see, Jesus says that's the way you can do it and be sure of your motives. See verse 3, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. We got a question this morning about should we feel really good about giving money Lachlan asked that, and I've been thinking about that this morning. I think Jesus doesn't just say, do it anonymously. He says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. I think he means, don't even make a big deal about it within yourself. Right? Just do it quietly, anonymously. It's not giving yourself like that. It's not, don't make it a big deal. So how could Mr. Turnbull have been absolutely sure of his motives in giving money to the homeless man? To give it anonymously. It might be hard for him because the cameras follow him around, but if he gave it anonymously, you could be sure he's giving to benefit that man rather than his reputation. But you notice at the very end, I left something out. For the follower of Jesus, there's something else. You see the end of verse 4. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. You see how this page, the page you got in front of this part of the Sermon on the Mount, is actually all about faith or trust. And that is, if you're going to do something, boy, if I gave it like anonymously and nobody knew, then what would I get out of it? Jesus saying, you trust that God sees and God will reward you. You have an audience of one, he sees, he'll reward you. Now, how will he reward you? There's some people will say, this is kind of this really crass prosperity theology thing. Oh, you give X, God will give you back 10X. And it's just kind of, it's almost a mathematical formula. You know, you give 100, God will give you 1,000. And then, ironically, you get people giving out of greed and selfishness because God becomes a great poker machine. No, it's not that crass. But I think the Bible says, if you are a generous person and you give, God will be generous back to you. And the part of the Bible to read is 2 Corinthians chapter 8, where Paul says to the Macedonians who've been generous and so on, he's saying, you've been generous and God will be generous back to you so that you can be even more generous. Not necessarily locked in terms of extra money. God will make you a generous person, give you the resources to be generous. Your life will get bigger, I think, is the promise. And there's a joy and a satisfaction in giving and seeing the good things that can happen. Okay, so that's giving to the needy. Have a look at verse 5 about what Jesus says about praying. And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they received their reward in full. Now, it may not have occurred to you to stand on a street corner here and pray or whatever, but in a religious subculture, church or in the subculture of Jesus' day, to be seen to be a great and fluent prayer, you know, people think you're wonderful. And Jesus is saying, if you are only praying to be seen by others for your reputation, well, you just got your reward in full. That's all you'll get. However, if you want to get your motives pure, if you need to get that right, verse 6, Jesus says, but when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen, and then your Father who sees what he's done in secret will reward you. Now, what would the reward be? Answer, God will hear your prayers. God will hear your prayers. Why? Because in prayer, it really is purely trust or faith in God. It's private. Trust or faith in God in action. You're trusting that God hears, God will listen. Does that mean that it's wrong to pray with other people or to kind of pray in a group? No. I can show you even on that page. Have a look at 6 verse 9, the Lord's Prayer. Okay, my Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom. Now, that's not what it says, is it? It's our Father. So Jesus' even pattern of prayer there is corporate, to pray together. Later on in Matthew's Gospel, you know, where two or three are gathered to pray, or in the book of Acts, there's group prayer meetings. So praying in a group's not wrong. It's just if we're not sure about our motives and why we pray, the way to make your motives absolutely pure about prayer is to do it privately. Okay, prayer and then fasting. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others that they're fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. As far as I can find, there's only one fast that was commanded in the Old Testament, and that was before the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, which is still celebrated by some of the Jewish people. The Pharisees and the religious leaders in Jesus' day had begun to fast twice a week. Now, if you're fasting twice a week, how do you, that's a big effort, how do you, what if no one notices? So he's saying they disfigure their faces, they look pale and hungry, and they show people to make sure that everyone knows that they're fasting. And Jesus is saying, you do that, well, you've received your reward. That is, other people will notice and think, aren't you wonderful? But that's it. For Christians in the New Testament, as far as I can see, and I'm happy to be corrected on this one, as far as I can see, fasting is optional for the Christian person. Jesus says here, when you fast, but he is talking to Jewish people before the cross, and so I can't find any command or real expectation in the letters written after Jesus' resurrection that you must fast. But it's optional. Why might you fast? Well, fasting is about being more intensive and deliberate in praying to God. Fasting makes you more aware of your own mortality and makes you more humble before God. It may be that there's something in your life that's not good, sin or something that you need to deal with that fasting may help with. But how can you make sure that fasting is only between you and God and it's not other people noticing? Well, he says in verse 17, but when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So how can you be sure? Well, get up in the morning, shave your head, put the sunblock on, have a shower. Well, I shave my head, whatever it is you do with your hair, okay? That's just my standard thing. I've been doing that for 20 years. Too much information, I know. Just look normal, okay? And smile, and then the only person who needs to know that you're fasting is God. The reward? Well, he doesn't spell it out, but I think what he means is this, that whatever it is that you are fasting about, whatever it is you are bringing before God that troubles you enough for you to do without food, God will take that seriously. Okay. Now, there's the three examples. My guess is Jesus could have multiplied that many times over in terms of good things you might do. But here we go. What's the basic point? That secrecy safeguards sincerity. And the four points have been, don't do your right actions to be praised by other people. Okay. If we want the praise of people, that's all the reward we'll get. And so secrecy safeguards sincerity, and God sees what is done in secret and will reward you. You see how the idea of trust or faith runs right through the whole thing. And that is, if you're going to do something good and costly and no one else is going to know, the basis of that is that, well, what if God's not watching, or what if God's asleep at the wheel, or what if God doesn't know? It's actually trusting that God will see and that God will reward you. It's not wrong to look for reward from God. It's actually trust or faith in action. God's saying, I want you to live this way, and I am good and I am wise, and there'll be a reward. And sometimes the reward is actually, I think mostly the reward is actually tied up in the activity itself. Okay, so as you do that activity, the reward's built into it. Do I know why the Lord's Prayer is written as a corporate prayer? That's a good question. Other than that it is, and it's the expectation that Christian people will pray together. It's just interesting, isn't it? It's not my Father. It's our Father, and forgive us, and the expectation that those of us who are Christian will pray together, and the idea of Christian community is very important. Right through the Sermon on the Mount, the big thing that Jesus is pushing is how do his people relate to one another, and how do you care for one another, etc., and then how do you relate to those who aren't believers in Jesus and treat them with love and care. One of the biggest changes in the New Testament is the idea that God's people will share God's Spirit together, the idea of the fellowship of God's Spirit. So being one and being together. So though I can see why his priority in prayer is that we be able to, those of us who are Christian, be able to pray, Our Father, and forgive us, you know, together. Yeah.
Work for churches.
Yes, it's a good question. What's the balance between going into the room and praying privately and then letting other people know that the good work and the good things that God is doing? So this morning I was talking to another group and saying to live with an audience of one. And the young man came up and said, yes, but I thought it was, if you're a Christian, you're supposed to let your good works and your life shine before others. And I said to him, if you can live with an audience of one, you'll live and just do things that please God, you will live a life of such quality. I'm not there yet, but you'll live a life of such quality other people will notice. Right? And yes, we're meant to talk about the good things that God has done, etc. I'm not saying it's just hard here, but the reason to talk about that is to point to God, right, and to other people rather than to ourselves. If you're speaking to 1,000 people just as content, I should say yes, but as a speaker, I'm not. I don't know. I'm not sure about that one. I'm not sure. Yeah, but when you speak, my motives for speaking to you should be that I need to tell you what it is that Jesus is saying and why it's important, rather than you think I'm a clever speaker or whatever. Yeah. And so motives always get mixed. And Jesus is giving examples. If you're not sure about your motives, anonymity secrecy safeguards sincerity. That's what he's saying. And the value of an action depends on why you do it. I think that's what he's pushing. And if we can live with an... Here's what I keep banging on about. You know what, if you remember what Elaine de Botton said about our egos are like balloons that are kind of constantly leaking? If you're a Christian, the more you can learn that it's actually God's regard and God's love and God's care that pumps up that balloon, the more that you can learn that, the more it sets you free from having to look sideways and worry about what other people think. It's just a very hard lesson to learn. So, yep. Do you want to push back on any of that? I'm not sure that I... The one in the thousand, I have to think about it. I can't say it doesn't matter to a speaker. Yes, I think you can feel good. All our righteousness is like filthy rags, a quote from one of the prophets, Isaiah, but I think that's the idea of on your own, with your own life and nothing else, are you really able to impress God? And the answer is no, you can't, all right? And you can do the right thing with the wrong motives and it's useless. Okay. Now, Romans chapter 14 says that everything that doesn't come from faith is sin. So anything that's done that's not in trust in God and not looking to please God is wrong. But I think once the Christian person who trusts Jesus and sets out to follow him, yes, you're able to do good. And I think you're able to appreciate that. But I think the idea is don't pat yourself on the back too much. So that's the idea of I've given to the needy, I've given to someone who's... Don't pat yourself on the back too much. Jesus says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. Don't over... Luke chapter 17 says, even when we've done everything that we were supposed to do, we should just say we're unworthy, we've just done our duty. Okay, so don't overinflate the value of everything we do. It's God's kindness that he rewards us rather than that we've necessarily earned it all. Okay. Right? I think that's, yeah. But there's certainly a satisfaction. And when it comes to giving, for example, if you're able to give generously to the right things in the right way, there's a great satisfaction in seeing the good that can happen. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says it's better to give than receive. I take it that it's the joy of giving that he's talking about. Yeah, some of the very wealthy people I know who are Christian are very much aware that God has given them that wealth and it's their duty to redirect it to where it should be. And so God's given me a huge amount and so I'm able to give lots to other... Well, yeah, that was my job. That's what I did. And so, you know, I don't think they're not patting themselves on the back as much as, you know, that, yeah, it's, is it a big deal? Well, no, it's just me redirecting God's generosity, maybe how they see it. Yep. When you see someone who really is wealthy and really is generous and is humble at the same time, that's a wonderful thing. Yeah, so.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.